Look at your wrist right now. I mean,
Sure.
if you're wearing a smartwatch or a fitness tracker, there is a really good chance it gave you some kind of score this morning.
Oh, absolutely. Like an energy score or maybe a readiness rating.
Right, exactly. Or, your body battery was drained or whatever proprietary term they use. And you probably just glanced at that number, maybe felt a little validated or slightly judged, and then just went about your day. I mean, we all do
We
it.
do. We treat that little number like it's a thermometer reading, like it's just this objective biological fact. We assume we are looking at this absolute truth about our bodies and that the math is just directly mapping onto our personal physiology. But that assumption is actually the exact blind spot that a multi-billion dollar industry is banking on.
Which brings us to our mission for today's deep dive. We are unpacking this fascinating, honestly kind of provocative manifesto from Vlad Silicu. It was published on localghost.ai in April 2026, and it's titled An Index is Not a Person.
It's a great title.
It really is. And the piece asks this genuinely dangerous question. What if the data on your wrist isn't actually measuring you at all? Like, what if it's just measuring how well you fit into a predetermined corporate box? We're going to completely unpack the hidden machinery that decides who you are on paper.
And we really need to be clear about the stakes right up front. I mean, this conversation stretches way beyond whether your sleep tracker is accurate.
For sure. It's way bigger than that.
It fundamentally challenges who owns the right to interpret your life. This is about how our data is weaponized across the entire consumer economy. Once you see the mechanism that Vlad is describing here, it will literally change how you view every app, every algorithm, and every single personalized recommendation you ever receive.
Well, let's start right at the beginning with that number on your wrist. Because Vlad opens the piece by talking about his own experience with his Samsung Galaxy Watch.
Right, he noticed this massive gulf between the raw data the watch collects and the final score it spits out.
Exactly. The raw metrics, so things like hours spent in bed, your REM sleep percentage, your resting heart rate, those are legible, concrete
They
measurements.
are real physiological events.
Right. But then the app takes those concrete measurements and just throws them into a blender to give you an energy score. And that blender is where all the trouble starts.
Because Samsung takes those real measurements and then adjusts them based on age and gender. But here's the kicker. They absolutely refuse to publish the weightings for those adjustments.
Wait, really? They just keep the math completely hidden.
Completely hidden. They have an algorithm evaluating Vlad, applying this very specific set of rules to his biology, and he is flat out not permitted to see the math.
It's basically like a teacher grading you on a secret curve, but you don't even know who else is sitting in the classroom with you.
That is a perfect way to describe it.
You think you're getting a grade based on your own homework, but your grade is actually being pulled up or down based on how these invisible classmates performed.
And it gets worse, honestly, because the algorithm assumes those invisible classmates actually dictate your personal potential.
How so?
Well, Vlad is 39, and he realized the watch wasn't grading him against his own historical baseline. It was grading him against a statistical ghost. It was comparing him to this invisible cohort of other 39-year-old men.
Ah, I
So
see.
if Vlad sleeps 6 hours, but the model's population of men his age averages 6.5 hours, his score just artificially drops. He's being forcefully nudged toward a statistical midpoint. The quote-unquote person at the center of his energy score is actually just a fiction assembled from cohort averages.
That is wild. So when I look at my own readiness score, I'm sitting there thinking I'm getting a highly personalized reading of my unique body, but I'm really just getting a reading of how well I conform to a corporate average.
Exactly. You are being measured against a ghost.
And if Samsung were the only one doing this, maybe we could just write it off as one bad product. But this is the industry standard.
Oh, it is the entire industry. To really grasp the scale of this, you have to look at the 2025 systematic review by Doherty and colleagues. It's a huge study.
What did they look at?
They evaluated 14 different composite health scores from 10 of the biggest wearable manufacturers in the world. We are talking Oura, Whoop, Garmin, Apple, literally all the heavy hitters.
I mean, I would assume companies at that level are constantly boasting about their rigorous peer-reviewed algorithms because they all market these scores as the ultimate scientific truth.
Oh, they certainly market them that way. But the Doherty study uncovered this massive void right at the center of all those
What
claims.
did they find?
Out of those 10 major manufacturers, absolutely none of them disclosed their exact algorithmic formulas.
None of them.
Zero. And the deep irony here is that they're all pulling from the exact same basic bucket of data. The study found that roughly 86% of these composite scores rely on heart rate variability and 79% use resting heart rate.
So they're all looking at the same inputs.
Right. But the specific equation, like the mathematical alchemy that turns your resting heart rate into a body battery, that is locked firmly behind a corporate wall.
Okay, so if Garmin and Whoop and all these guys are basically guarding these proprietary formulas that just guess at our readiness based on a hidden curve, it really forces us to ask what a trustworthy number actually looks like.
Right, like what is the alternative?
Yeah, so let's look at Vlad's day job. Because before he wrote this manifesto, he actually spent a decade building financial indices.
His background is super crucial to understand here. Vlad actually led the work on CryptoCompare's Aggregated Price Index. It's known as the CCCAGG index.
And what does that index actually do?
They basically take the price of Bitcoin, they pull in the trade volume across roughly 300 different cryptocurrency exchanges, and they synthesize all of that chaos into one official benchmark price.
Okay, so structurally, the mechanics are somewhat similar to a smartwatch score. You take a bunch of scattered data points and you crunch them into a single digestible number. But Vlad specifically calls his crypto index an honest reduction, whereas he says the smartwatch score is not. Why the distinction?
The distinction lies entirely in transparency and reproducibility. With the financial index, the methodology is published for the entire world to see.
Okay.
The specific volume thresholds that are required to include or exclude an exchange, that is all public knowledge. It's highly regulated under the UK benchmark regulation. If an auditor wanted to come in and verify the index, they could take what we call raw tick data.
Meaning like every single individual trade that occurs.
Yes, every trade, frame by frame, across all 300 of those exchanges. An auditor could take millions of those raw ticks, run them through Vlad's published rules, and arrive at the exact same final number. The math is completely visible.
I'm trying to square this in my head. Why can we have that level of mathematical transparency for the price of a digital coin, but we can't have it for our own human health metrics?
It comes down to the nature of the thing being measured, the referent. Because a Bitcoin price is a real distributed quantity. It actually exists in the real world, scattered across order books in Tokyo, New York, and London. The index doesn't invent the price out of thin air. It just captures a reality that is already occurring.
Okay, I see. There is a literal objective truth out there to be measured.
Exactly. But Garmin body battery is not a real distributed quantity.
Right.
You cannot go out into nature or into a laboratory and find a raw unit of body battery. It literally does not exist outside the software model. The corporate model entirely invents it.
Wow. So these wellness companies are basically borrowing the authority of a scientific index. They give you a number that feels very official and medical, but they reject all of the obligations of transparency that actually make an index trustworthy.
That is the core deception. They won't publish the weightings, you can't reproduce the methodology, and there is no regulatory body auditing their math.
So the number on your wrist is pointing at nothing but the algorithm that birthed it.
Yeah, precisely.
But, I mean, if the score is basically a fiction, why build it in the first place? Like, why are tech companies so deeply obsessed with grouping us into these hidden cohorts?
Well, Vlad traces this back to a deeply ingrained human survival instinct. He calls it the instinct of bucketing.
Bucketing. Explain that a bit more.
So bucketing is this automatic classifier that we all use. The moment someone walks into a room, before a single word is even spoken, your brain sorts them. Threatening, safe, wealthy, scruffy, tall, short. You do it instantly to navigate public spaces safely and efficiently.
Right. It fires before we can even consciously consent to it. We just need to know if the person walking toward us in a dark alley is a threat.
Exactly.
But Vlad tells this incredible story in the piece to illustrate just how flawed our internal bucketing can be. He talks about his friend Gordon.
Oh, I love this story.
So good. So Vlad was recovering from a bad bike accident, and his friend Gordon came over to his shared house to check on him. Now, Gordon is a massive, towering biker. He has a huge, busy beard. He wears full leather gear, completely covered in skull motifs, and his motorcycle helmet literally has the word hell painted on it in bold letters.
Just think about the internal bucket that Vlad's housemates immediately placed Gordon into when that guy walked through their front door.
I mean, their internal classifiers must have been screaming, intimidating, aggressive, keep your distance. But then Gordon sees Vlad's tiny little kitten, Melly.
Yeah.
And this massive, scary biker picks up this fragile little kitten, sits it down on the sofa, and just gently holds her on his chest for 90 straight minutes.
And in that single moment, the bucket dissolves.
Completely evaporates. Vlad points out that the version of Gordon that exists in his housemates' heads now is just the gentle giant who loves kittens. The initial category they placed him in was totally wrong, and so it was corrected.
And that is the crucial difference between human bucketing and corporate bucketing. The human instinct is flawed, sure, but it possesses a built-in self-correcting loop.
The self-correcting loop.
Right. Through conversation, through time spent together, or just observing a surprising action, you can override a first impression. The category stays open to revision based on actual contact with the real person.
But the corporate wellness score removes that contact entirely. There is no version of you that gets to show up to Garmin or Samsung, hold a kitten, and dissolve the corporate bucket.
No, you're trapped. If the algorithm assumes you are a fatigued, low-energy 39-year-old because of some generic baseline, you simply cannot argue with it. The algorithm fires based on prior assumptions weighted by your demographic, and it only updates when the executives in a boardroom decide to tweak the formula.
Okay, so if you're listening to this right now and wondering, okay, sure, my watch has me in the wrong bucket, so what? Who cares? You have to realize what these companies are actually doing with that bucket.
Yeah.
Like, if the score isn't a pure reflection of you, what is the actual point of all this categorization?
Vlad frames this flawlessly. He writes, "The score is the interface and the bucket is the product."
Okay, unpack that for me.
The number they show you on the screen exists primarily to make you legible to advertisers.
So let's follow the data on that. Say I buy a Samsung watch. I track my sleep. How does my little sleep score turn into a monetized product?
All you have to do is read the privacy policy for the Samsung customization service. It explicitly states that it combines your health data with your account data, your app usage, your search terms, and even your browsing history.
Wait, it links my sleep data with my web browsing.
Oh, yeah. The stated purpose is to infer your interests and serve you highly personalized ads across all your devices.
So my smartwatch quietly shuffles me into the exhausted middle-aged male bucket.
And that bucket determines the environment around you. It determines the in-app upsells you see, the targeted Instagram ads for testosterone supplements or sleep aids, and the premium subscription nudges.
Wow.
The health data is just feeding the targeting machinery. The bucket you are placed in is what the advertisers are actually buying. That energy score is just the shiny interface they hand to you to keep you wearing the tracker and keep you feeding the machine.
That is incredibly manipulative. And this exact machinery is running across the entire consumer economy. It's not just wearables. As Vlad points out, outside of the wellness space, this whole segmentation economy has much sharper teeth.
Oh, absolutely. Look at auto insurance.
Yeah, let's talk about that because most people do not know this, but roughly 95% of U.S. auto insurers use FICO credit-based insurance scores.
Yeah, 95%.
Right. They take your credit report, they weight your payment history at like 40%, your outstanding debt at 30%, and they use that to predict how likely you are to file a car crash claim.
It's wild.
Yeah.
You are being bucketed by financial risk to determine driving risk. And the thing you have to understand about actuarial science is that it doesn't care about fairness. It only cares about correlation.
Right.
FICO's own documentation literally admits that the correlation between your credit data and your insurance loss is purely empirical, not causal.
Okay, we definitely need to define the difference there because it is maddening when you really think about it.
Sure. So a causal relationship means your action directly caused the outcome. Like speeding causes crashes. That makes sense. But an empirical correlation just means two random data points happen to line up on a spreadsheet.
It's like an insurance company noticing that people who happen to wear red sneakers also happen to have higher rates of heart disease. Wearing red sneakers obviously doesn't cause a heart attack. But the algorithm links the two things. So the moment you buy red shoes, your health insurance premium goes up. And FICO literally states that no one has ever investigated why a causal relationship would exist between paying a credit card late and crashing a Honda Civic. Your premium goes up simply because you were sorted into a statistical cohort.
Right. You didn't drive recklessly. You were just compressed into a mathematical category so the insurer could optimize their profit margins.
And I want to look at how this happens in entertainment, too, because it really is everywhere. Spotify, for instance, creates what they call mood clusters to serve you ads based on whether you're listening to a high-energy workout playlist or a sad breakup mix.
Netflix goes even further than that. They divide their users into roughly 2,000 taste communities. They actually refer to them internally as taste doppelgangers.
Taste doppelgangers.
Yeah. Netflix has openly admitted they strongly prefer behavioral clustering over traditional demographics. They group you with millions of strangers who share hyper-specific content preferences across genres.
Right, so the math might connect me with people who watch Lost, Black Mirror, and Groundhog Day because the algorithm has detected a shared affinity for supernatural puzzle boxes.
Ooh, exactly.
But I'll admit, playing devil's advocate here as a consumer, I like finding good shows. Is Netflix grouping me with taste doppelgangers really a bad thing if it gives me a genuinely great Friday night movie recommendation?
Well, the harm isn't in discovering a good sci-fi show. Obviously, that's great.
Sure.
The harm is the industrial scale-up of this categorization without your explicit consent or control. It fundamentally turns you into a sortable record optimized for corporate outcomes. They want engagement, retention. They want to keep your eyeballs glued to the screen.
Right. It's about keeping you in the ecosystem.
Exactly. And it becomes deeply manipulative when companies start grafting social pressure onto the bucketing.
You mean things like Strava segments or Apple Watch rings or fitness app leaderboards?
Yes, because platforms know that a ranked, competitive presentation produces way more engagement than just a static number. So they blend the bucketing with social comparison.
Oh, that makes sense.
Now, you aren't just being measured by the algorithm. You are the measuring stick for your friends. It radically amplifies the psychological pressure to conform to the model's metrics.
Yeah.
Because you're actively competing against the cohort.
We are just constantly being compared to invisible cohorts, reduced to opaque scores, and auctioned off to advertisers. It is a pretty bleak picture of the modern web. So the obvious question is, how do we break out of this segmentation economy?
Well, this is why Vlad isn't just writing a critique here. He is actually building an architectural solution. This project called Local Ghost. And it is an AI designed with a fundamental refusal to participate in the cohort model.
A fundamental refusal. So how does Local Ghost achieve that?
It runs entirely locally on your own hardware, your laptop, your phone. It explicitly does not send your data up to a cloud server to be processed alongside millions of other users.
Okay, so Vlad operates on this design philosophy he calls single user fragility.
Yes. His argument is that an AI system must earn the right to describe one person honestly before it ever tries to rank millions of people against each other. Because Local Ghost is private by design, it possesses no baseline imported from strangers.
So it literally can't compare me to anyone else.
Exactly. It refuses to collect data on other 39-year-old men, which means it cannot physically force you into that cohort.
If it refuses to hold a cohort, it dismantles the entire targeting arrangement. But I am genuinely stuck on the logistics here. If the Ghost runs entirely on my local machine and has no average baseline to compare against, how does it actually generate a useful insight about my life?
It describes you entirely in terms of yourself. It looks at the raw context you feed it. So instead of handing you a mysterious 64 out of 100 readiness score, the Ghost might look at your local activity and say, hey, your code commit activity on GitHub dropped significantly around the exact same time your deep sleep minutes fell off this week.
Oh, wow. So it relies on observable friction in my own life.
Exactly. You can verify if you were coding less. You can verify if you slept less. It doesn't require a statistical classifier, and it doesn't compress you into a bucket so a vitamin company can sell against it.
But you might wonder, I mean, AI models still have inherent biases from their initial training data, right? Like, they hallucinate. How does Local Ghost prevent the AI from just making up a totally different kind of fiction about you?
That is the big question. If it's a language model, it still has priors baked into it. To solve this, Vlad introduces a brilliant technical failsafe, the shadowed architecture.
Mm-hmm.
The Ghost actually uses a dual instance setup. It has an adversarial sibling.
An adversarial sibling. Walk me through how the shadowed sibling actually works in practice.
Okay, so when you ask the Ghost a question about your week, it runs the query twice. First, it runs it normally, routing the prompt through the vector database containing all of your personal memory and context.
Right.
Then the adversarial sibling, the shadowed you, runs the exact same query, but completely blind. It acts like a factory reset model with zero access to your memories.
So you basically have one model answering with full, rich context and one model answering with just generic, baked-in assumptions.
Yes. And the system automatically calculates the divergence between the two answers.
Oh, that's clever.
Right. If the answers are vastly different, it proves the AI is relying heavily on your specific data. But if the answers are identical, the system flags it. It essentially tells you, hey, my conclusion here isn't coming from your life. It's coming from my pre-trained assumptions. it actively surfaces its own blind spots.
That is an unbelievable level of transparency. It literally shows you its homework. And for me, the absolute best part of this architecture is that these reductions are entirely editable.
Yes, you can correct the record. If the ghost analyzes your week and says you've been unproductive and sluggish, you can just ask it to show its work. It shows you the data points. And if its reasoning is flawed, like maybe you weren't sluggish, maybe you were just on vacation and purposely unplugged,
yeah,
you can argue with it.
You can just edit the category it placed you in. That self-correcting loop that the human brain naturally does, like the biker holding the kitten local ghost, is trying to finally put that human loop back into the software.
It's a really profound vision for reclaiming the sovereignty of our own data. But Vlad is clear-eyed about the challenges. In fact, at the end of the piece, he teases his next post, which explores a completely different danger on the horizon.
Well, what's the danger if the system is completely private and editable?
He asks, what happens when an AI ghost gets so good at understanding your context and so efficient at summarizing your emotional state that it actually outcompetes messy human contact?
Oh, I see.
Right. A truly respectful, user-centric system has to recognize when you don't actually need a perfectly calibrated AI summary. Sometimes you just need the friction of calling a friend or going outside to play a game of squash.
Because digital efficiency can very quickly become a polite word for social avoidance.
Exactly the trap.
Man, we have covered incredible ground today. We started with the opaque cohort-driven numbers on our smartwatches, uncovered how the segmentation economy turns us into monetized buckets based on empirical correlations, and looked at a radical AI architecture trying to give us back the right to interpret ourselves. But before we wrap up, I really want to leave you, the listener, with a thought about where all of this is heading next.
Yeah, the generational impact.
Exactly. Think about children being born right now. We adopted these smartwatches in our 20s or 30s. We know what it feels like to exist unmeasured, but today we are putting smart socks on infants to track their heart rate and oxygen while they sleep in the crib.
Day one tracking.
Right. We are building a generation whose baseline is synthetic from day one. When those kids grow up and apply for life insurance or auto insurance or even a job, what happens when the institutions demand access to their lifelong algorithmic cohort data to prove they aren't a high risk?
That's a terrifying thought.
If we don't demand transparent, locally owned architectures like Local Ghosts today, the invisible bucket won't just sell them targeted ads. It will dictate the boundaries of their entire lives. Keep that in mind the next time your watch tells you how to feel.